but being able to speak the language, I think, is super helpful. And I think that translates across to any sport, but also to any profession as well, right? If you can talk the language with them and you can connect with them, you know, I think that those contacts in your phone will come because you know, you're personable and you're able to relate to them. Because at the end of the day, humans are still humans, and you still need interaction and connection in order to, like, move forward in a relationship, right? Whether that's a working relationship or a personal relationship, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have to have some sort of connection.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stable Cyclist Podcast. My name is JP, and I am so very glad that you are here today with me. Thank you so much for being here and for being you. It is the month of May, and that means we are in Mental Health Awareness Month as well. And if you're new here on the Stable Cyclist Podcast, we are very much about bikes and mentality and life, but we are 100% also about mental health. And we have some really incredible guests on tap this month. You got to hear my sister last week talk about how to speak to your family about mental health. Today's guest, Sam Rockwater, has a really unique story as well. But we also thought that this month seemed like a great time to have our first Ask Me Anything episode. Aaron Haugen, my main cameraman and close friend who was a previous episode on the pod, is going to join the pod as a co-host and help me answer your questions. So whatever questions you have for me, whether they're about bikes or mentality or mental health, ask away. You got questions about racing the Mataje, or you maybe have questions about my own mental health that you want to ask me, or you've got questions maybe about some nugget from a previous podcast or a regular YouTube episode, ask away. This is the time to do it. You can drop those questions in the comments of this episode on YouTube, or you can send them in a DM on Instagram at the Stable Cyclist, or you can use thestablecyclist@gmail.com to email Aaron and I, and we will read those questions. This episode is brought to you by Flow Formulas. If you are training for a big race, or you're just training to be a healthy person in life and you want to feel your best on the bike, then Flow Formulas Endurance Mix and Recovery Mix are for you. I, as many of you know, am a very salty sweater, and so I use the high sodium mix, and it has been a game changer for me on the bike. And you can use John Peter 15 at checkout on your next order for a little bit of a discount on those goodies in your cart. Finally, the biggest way that you can help us continue to grow the podcast and help more people find these episodes is share them. Share them with your friends. Share them on social media with whomever you think would benefit from them. Because there is a lot of good content in here from the guests that are with me. All right. Enough of all that. It is time to bring my friend Dr. Sam Rockwater into the studio. Well, Dr. Sam Rockwater, welcome to the Stable Cyclist Podcast. It has been a hot minute since we hung out, rode a bike together, or that you lived in the area, but it is really good to see you, and especially once we got all figured out what time it is in Phoenix versus the rest of the world.
Yes. Yes, a little challenging.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. We had an original connection. We always start out kind of zero to hero on this, or from like never riding to pro license, but we'll go zero to hero on this one. And we have a history together going back to like 2014, 2015, racing gravel bikes together. I know for sure of one Saturday in 2015 where we really tried to hurt each other before you escaped in a local gravel race and won. And you were a mechanic at the shop that was supporting both of us. And so today you are this guy running his own business in Arizona with being a physical therapist, and you are working with some of the top triathletes and athletes in the world. How do we get from you and I trying to like kick each other's teeth in rural Minnesota gravel racing to what you're doing now. Take us on that path, man.
Yeah. Thanks, first of all, JP, for having me. I appreciate it. It's been fun to listen to your podcast. And so, you know, now obviously being on here will be a lot of fun too. Man, the zero to hero, not gonna lie, man, I definitely, enjoyed those gravel races, regardless of what it was, you know, and it was just a lot of fun being out there. And I hope you had the same thing. Obviously, you know, that one race that you're alluding to didn't quite turn out your way, but it was a lot of fun to go out there and race. But, no, so, I mean, I originally was a swimmer in college at the University of St. Thomas. I ran, and girlfriend, now wife, at the time had a road bike, and she's like, "Oh, you should get into biking." And I said, "Oh, you're pretty cute. I should probably get a bike, and we should go out on a date." And that, as funny as that is, man, that's exactly how I started cycling and kind of getting into it. But from there, it just all kind of, you know, rolled downhill from there. So I ended up getting a PT school at the University of Jamestown, which is in Fargo, North Dakota, and that's essentially where we kind of ended up connecting. I ended up really enjoying cycling, got more and more into it, found that was kind of my outlet during my kind of mental checkout and outlet during physical therapy school. And so had a buddy who I knew who swam, who was from the area. Shout out Logan Arnold, if he ever even listens to this bad boy. But essentially, he had a job at Paramount Sports, which is a local bike shop in Fargo. And he's like, "Yeah, like, if you want to come in and just build bikes, you can now." So I was like, "Great, wonderful." So I ended up doing that and got more and more and deeper into cycling, and, you know, started pushing the boundaries of what some of those bikes were capable of, you know, fitting the fattest tire possible into the cyclocross bikes, you know, before there was such thing as gravel bikes. And then from there, graduated PT school. Ended up heading back down to the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, which is where I'm originally from, just south of St. Paul. Worked there for about a year or so, and then was ultimately kind of frustrated because I felt like I was a one-trick pony being a physical therapist. I was definitely burnt out of school, going right out of school. I was definitely like burnt out for sure. And then had like a year or so, year-ish under my belt, and was getting frustrated that I felt like I could get 85% of people better, but I didn't know what to do for the other 15%, and they were always stumping me. So I ended up doing a sports physical therapy residency down in Tucson, Arizona. And you know, yeah, I mean, looking back at it, I do have quite the resume of endurance athletes who I've treated over the years, but, how that all actually started was I was out on a run, and there's this bike trail in Tucson called the Loop. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Essentially, it's a 55-mile paved pedestrian only trail all around the city of Tucson, and it has branches and arms and stuff. So it's like 120, 130 miles. It's insane. But I was out on a run. Just like, again, a little mental study break, need to, you know, get a little endorphin rush, a little exercise and a little break from the world. And all of a sudden I ran by this person and I was like, "Man, she looks really familiar." And I kind of like look back and do a second take and I realize it's Heather Jackson, and Lindsay Corbin. They're out on a run. I don't know. For those of you who don't know, Heather Jackson and Lindsay Corbin are kind of legends in the triathlon world. They have been multiple times in long course triathlons, so in the Ironman series and stuff like that, and multiple wins under their belts, and, you know, top five finishes in Kona. I mean, they're just absolutely amazing humans and athletes. And so anyways, I kind of turned back and they kind of looked back at me like, "I feel like I know you from somewhere." They definitely didn't, I'm sure. But anyways, I got done with my run.
You wanted him to think that.
Right. I was like, wait a minute. And they kind of like looked back at me and I was like, I was like, I feel like I definitely know who you are, but I'm sure that they probably didn't know who I was. I don't know. I need to ask Heather and Lindsay about that sometime. But essentially I got back to my apartment at the time and texted my mentor, and I was like, oh man, I just saw like Heather Jackson, Lindsay Corbin, like they're crazy good, like Ironman triathletes, and like, it would be so cool to treat them. And she goes, go for it. And I'm going, what? She's like, yeah, go for it. And I'm like, what do you mean go for it? Like, go for what? You know? And she's like, why don't you message them and like, see, you know, message them, reach out to them, see, you know, if they need anything. And I'm like, okay. So I formulated this message, sent it out to them, sent out to Heather Jackson, Lindsay Corbin, and then Ben Hoffman.
How long did you work on that message?
Far too long than I care to mention. It probably took me an hour to craft that message or so.
Days?
No. Oh, okay, okay. Probably an hour for a 2-sentence message. You know, but anyways, I ended up reaching out to the three of them. And so Lindsay Corbin, Heather Jackson, and Ben Hoffman, who's also another local Tucson triathlete. And they all got back to me. They're all super nice. Hey, thanks, appreciate it. You know, if I need anything, I'll let you know. And Ben Hoffman actually messaged me back and goes, actually, we do. I hurt myself yesterday. When would be a good time to come in and see you? And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Like, what is going on? I don't know anything. You know? And I'm like, you know, here at this point in time, I'm, you know, a year and a half out from physical therapy school and, you know, just starting my residency. Really don't, you know, still learning the craft by all means. Anyways, fast forward, have a great session with them. He did end up actually having a very significant injury that kept him out of the world championship that year. Rehabbed him back. He felt really good. And then in January, once his rehab was done, he's like, hey, why don't you be my strength coach and PT? So like, if I need stuff, I can, you know, come to you and, you know, you can program my strength and that'd be great and whatever. And so anyways, we ended up doing that, and he just had an absolute rock star year. He won Ironman South Africa and set course records in the bike and the run both in that same year. And so just had multiple awesome years with him. And then once you have one domino fall, then more start to fall, and then the more and more and more and more. And so ended up going, you know, they invited me over for dinner a couple times, Ben and his wife Kelsey did. And before you know it, you know, Heather Jackson's there and Sean Watkins or Wadi from Wadi Inc. is there, you know, cause Heather and Wadi are married, great people. And so then you start meeting them and you start meeting, you know, then I met Lindsay and then Sebastian Keenle came over for a training camp. And so, you know, Ben said, hey, you know, is it okay if, you know, he uses the gym and lifts? And I'm like, absolutely. By all means, like, let's do a gait analysis. Like, I'll offer you a free gait analysis, right? Like, all sorts of stuff. And then, you know, in terms of like the Team USA stuff. So right now, I do physical therapy for Team USA Triathlon. Ben's coach, his name is Ryan Bolton. He was Ben's coach throughout most of his last half of his career or so. And anyways. I got to know him fairly well just through the rehab process and then like strength training and like having him trust me with strength training. And normally, you know, I moved up to Phoenix and normally I'll get a call or a text from him that says, hey, call me whenever you can, which normally means, oh crap, somebody is hurt. SOS. I need you to fix this now. And so I call him. I'm like, hey Ryan, what's going on? He's like, oh, nothing. How you doing? Just starts making small talk. And I'm going, so what's up? What do you need? And he's like, oh, well, you know, I got this job with Team USA and, you know, I think that you'd be a great therapist for them. And, you know, would you be interested in traveling to these events and stuff like that? And it's just one of those things where, you know, you just never really know what's going to happen and what's like, what one thing will lead to another. And, you know, you start meeting these people, and then before you know it, you know, Ben is referring, you know, Lionel contacts Ben, and Lionel Sanders, who's another pro triathlete, contacts Ben Hoffman, is like, hey, I'm injured, you know, who do you go to? Who's your guy? And then, you know, before you know it, you know, I'm starting to see everyone and anyone who's coming through Tucson. But that's my very long-winded answer of essentially where I am and what I've got to. But yeah, so now I have my own private practice and I'm seeing all those people and I travel down to Tucson once a week and yeah, it's been good. It's been good.
Right on, man. This is so awesome. Mainly because I know you, you know, and I like,
sure.
I think back to like the hardworking guy on a gravel bike where we're talking or we're, you know, hobnobbing in the bike shop.
Yeah.
And to get to see what you're doing. I remember the first time I knew you had gone down to Arizona and I had seen on social you were working with Ben Hoffman and mm-hmm. I didn't really know who Ben was other than like, this guy's a good Ironman person. But I'm a Lionel Saunders subscriber on YouTube. And one day he's going in for treatment and he's like getting dry needling on his hamstring or his glute.
Yeah.
And they like his cameraman Talbot like zooms out and it's you. And I was like, oh my gosh,
yeah.
Like you are legit working on the best in the world right now. So that was amazing to get to see. Like you said, you are starting to do some work with Team USA Triathlon. And I see now that you're in places like Abu Dhabi and Korea and mm-hmm. also really sexy places like Canada. But
yes.
are we going to see you potentially in Paris at the Olympics with these guys with the Olympic triathlon team? Or is that not in the cards yet for you?
I wish, man. I wish. No, not in Paris this year, unfortunately. You know, I would love to go to Olympics someday. I would absolutely love it. It's been a dream of mine. I don't know why, but since I was a little kid, I was obsessed with Olympics. Like, I would sit down and I would watch the entire opening ceremony, all of the countries walk through. Right before it got all abbreviated and stuff like what we see now, right? So they used to show the entire opening ceremony, and I would memorize all the flags, all the different countries, and like I would just sit in front of the TV, just absolutely mesmerized by it. So unfortunately, I'm not going to Paris this year. I would love to go to Olympics someday, maybe 2028 in LA. You know, it's right down the street. I can literally drive to it. It's a 6-hour drive, but I can literally drive to LA. Yeah, hopefully in the future. Unfortunately, not this summer, but I do have a few really fun trips coming up with them to Germany and heading off to Italy in 2 weeks here, and then back to our lovely neighbors to the north, back to Canada later on this year. So.
Are you at least going to like the Quebec region where you feel like you're in a different country compared to like Manitoba?
Yeah. Yes. I'm going back to Montreal, Canada. So whenever you go in the shops there, they look at you and, you know, I'm fair skinned enough. You know, I grew up in Minnesota, you know, and so they kind of like look at you and they speak French to you and you kind of cock your head to the side and then they instantly switch over to English and then it's no big deal, you know, and they kind of, I think they kind of low-key judge you, but, you know, is what it is. They judge us as Americans anyways, so it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So, you know, you mentioned earlier that, like, that message with Hoffman was really the first domino to fall. And I'm so intrigued looking through your social media, and I also run into a lot of people today that think, like, the path from where you were as a mechanic in Fargo going to school in Jamestown to where you're working with all these pros is linear and it was easy to get to. And I sometimes see you do like ask me anything questions on social media. And some of the questions people will ask you be like, how do I start working with the pros? And, mm-hmm. and your response, you're always so gentle to them, but everybody wants the shortcut. And you talked about, you know, once the first domino fell, then the rest started to go. But like I've had experience on a level that like has taken me years to get the domino to fall. How mm-hmm. hard for you was it to get that first domino to fall?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just a text message that you sent out, you know,
correct.
Like
correct.
This is about grinding essentially, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I just kind of laugh and smirk because I get that question all the time, right? How do you get to work with pros? How do you get to be where you are? And the short answer is I worked my ass off. And that's really the short answer to it. And I don't want to sound egotistical at all. But like that's the short answer to it. The long, gentler answer is there's a lot of trials and tribulations, and there's high points and low points, and very high points and very low points that essentially get you to that level. And you know, there's a lot of sacrifice that goes through it too, right? I knew, you know, going down to Tucson and, you know, that residency. And I mean, there were times where, you know, we had to punch in and punch out. Even though we were salaried, we just had to punch in, punch out. And there were times where I was like at, like for a work period, I was at like 110 hours, 120 hours. So that's like 60 hours. Yeah, that's 60 hours in the clinic. And that's not even the stuff outside of the clinic. When I go to the high school on Thursday nights and Friday nights and go there from, you know, 4 o'clock to 11 p.m. at night. I mean, I was, admittedly, I mean, I was a transient husband. You know, my wife was essentially, you know, gone, or, you know, I was essentially gone, you know, and, you know, to get to that point, you know, the first domino is definitely the most challenging. You know, and I tell a lot of young clinicians this, or people who are aspiring to work with pro athletes, is that it takes sacrifice for sure. And you also too have to have somebody who's very willing and understanding in your support system to be able to do that, if that makes sense. Because I know that I was gone all the time. I was working my ass off, you know, and finding that first domino. Yeah, you know, a little bit of it was luck, you know, in terms of, you know, I just happened to message him, and he happened to get hurt literally the day before, right? But, you know, you talk about sometimes, you know, stars align, and, you know, things happen for a reason. And you know, I never wish injury on anyone, right? You know, I don't wish that. I wish that, you know, I would be able to, you know, all of a sudden not have a job, but that's just not the case. As long as there's human intuition, there's going to be physical therapy for that you need for it. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I took a lot of time to learn the craft and of physical therapy and like of rehab, and then like really trying to hone into a certain, niche, which is endurance athletes, and learning as much as I can, totally just engrossing myself into the culture, into that. And that can be challenging, to a certain extent for sure. But I generally speaking, like, you know, social media is good and bad. I made it more of a goal moving forward here to show more of like the bad and the struggle, because it's so glamorized, in the sense that, you know, we only show the highlights of life, but we don't necessarily show the lowlights. And I think that, you know, it looks right like I'm, you know, freaking killing it and, you know, just absolutely, you know, enjoying life to the fullest. But I mean, there, and you know, there are days where absolutely, you know, I'm sitting on a, you know, in Italy and, you know, on a beach, you know, because, you know, I'm getting paid for by Team USA to be out there, you know, but then also too, you don't see is the race day that I'm up at 6 a.m. and that, you know, I go to bed at midnight. You know what I mean? Like that's a long day and I'm not stopping moving. I'm slamming power bars and protein bars and stuff like that because I just don't have time to eat. You know, and so like, you know, that's the non-glamorous stuff that happens. And I think that's something too that I think I would like to share more with people, but that would be, you know, something that social media I think can portray or kind of twist how they want. But long story short, it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of saying yes to things, whether you want to or not. You know, there are so many times where, you know, I know I'm just going to take Ben, for example, because I have a very close relationship with him and I know he'd be okay with it. But like, you know, there were times where, you know, he'd call me on like Monday at like 8 p.m. or like a Tuesday at 8 p.m. I'm done treating. I'm home. And he's like, yo, I got this thing. Like, it's killing me. Like, are you able to make it over? And the answer is yes. You know, my wife wasn't super pumped all the time about that stuff, but she understood athletics and she understood like sometimes that's what it takes. Yeah. Right. But when you go above and beyond with people, and you're genuine and you care about them, people will notice. And I think that's something too, that has really helped me, is that, you know, I like to think that I'm as genuine of a person as it comes. And, you know, I'm a straight shooter. You know, if you know something's hurt and you shouldn't, you know, run or ride on it, I'll tell you. But also too, you know, I'm gonna be there for you when you need me, and I'm also gonna be there for you when you don't need me. You know, and you know, being that sounding board. Okay, you know, you're healthy and that's awesome. Like, I text athletes all the time. You know, like, I have a pro baseball guy, a couple of guys who I treat here in Phoenix, and like, you know, a couple of them, you know, they'll go in and out of like struggles with hitting and pitching and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm just, hey, it's like, you know, I'm here for you, man. Like, keep it up, keep grinding. Like, you got it, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, that comes from more a genuine side than not. But I think that's something that people definitely gravitate towards and latch onto, because it's not, in a world where everything is salesy and, you know, make the most money you can and, you know, in your face now, done, you know, that I think sometimes gets lost in translation. And I think that is also what helps like that first domino turn into 2, 3, 4, 5, 20, you know, down the road.
Yeah, 100%. And to me, you know, the text you sent to Ben and to Heather and Lindsay that got the ball rolling, to me, that's not where the luck is. The luck is that you, like, you know, we always talk about, like, you make your own luck, right? By the doing all the things before that text that put it in motion and everything else you're talking about, like, yeah, I'm grinding like crazy still. That's where you're building your own luck into things and you're making sure, like, no, I'm ready for this whenever this opportunity comes. And that's where I see a lot of people today, especially young people, missing out on, like, no, you just got to go grind. Like, you just got to go grind, and then the opportunity will present itself at some point, and you'll be ready, and you'll, like, you'll hit a home run with it because you're ready.
Yeah.
So with all these hot shots in your phone and in your contacts, who is, you maybe can't say because this is medical related, but like, who is the most, what's the best contact you got in your phone that you can disclose to us?
Oh man. I don't know. I got a lot of pro athletes. I got some pretty high names. There are some people who I definitely can't say, and I don't mean to be that type of person, but there's some pretty good, there's some people who are making, multiple millions of dollars a year in my contact list, but, I can't say for a few different reasons, but, both medically and also
for sport side.
But no, I mean, there's, you know, the thing is, at the end of the day, they're still humans, right? And, you know, they still need human interaction, and they still need, normal conversations. You know, there's, I know that I've had a lot of pro athletes come to me because I treat them like a normal person, right? I'm not, oh my God, it's, you know, so-and-so, you know, oh my God, you know, this is crazy. Like, I can't believe I'm treating them. And, you know, yeah, you know, the first one, you know, when Ben came in, yeah, of course I was nervous, you know, like, because I knew that was my shot. You know what I mean? Like, I knew that was my shot. That was my opportunity. I knew that was my shot. I was more nervous because I knew that was my shot than the fact that it was Ben Hoffman. No offense, Ben, but you know what I mean? Like, because I knew that, like, that would spur more opportunities if I hit out of the park. And like you alluded to, you know, like, being prepared and being ready for it. Like, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, at that point in time, I was like 2 or 3 months in my residency. So I was very young, very new into it. but my passion for endurance sports and triathlon was there. And that was, I think, a differential that made Ben go, okay, like, we'll do it, right? And like, see where this goes, right? And you know, you just never know, like, what stuff you do in the background. And like, you know, I worked at a triathlon store in Minneapolis, right? Like, I knew all the gear, I knew all that stuff, right? So I could connect with him on that level too, right? Which was different than what they see in most physical therapists, right? And you know, yeah, of course, you know, he got, you know, paid to ride bikes, and you know, he got all these different bikes and stuff like that, you know, but being able to speak the language, I think, is super helpful. And I think that translates across to any sport, but also to any profession as well, right? If you can talk the language with them and you can connect with them, you know, I think that those contacts in your phone will come because, you know, you're personable and you're able to relate to them. Because at the end of the day, humans are still humans, and you still need interaction and connection in order to like move forward in a relationship, right? Whether that's a working relationship or a personal relationship, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have to have some sort of connection.
Absolutely. Sam, you aren't just a physical therapist or a physio. I do love that you call it a physio, man, because like, you know, coming from the world of like European sports.
Yeah.
And like, I don't really watch American sports, and they're never in European sports referred to as a physical therapist. So yeah, like, it just warms my heart every time I see your name on social or I see something from you, and I'm like, oh, he gets it. Like, he understands it. It's a physio. But you aren't just a physio. Like, yeah, you are a multi-time Ironman finisher. You finished Leadville. I'm sure there's a lot of, I think you've finished Whiskey 50. There's a lot of other events I'm missing, but you have been really outspoken in those finishes. You have not just been like, hey, I'm dope because I finished Ironman. I remember the first time you finished Ironman, the post didn't have anything to do with the race. It was about, I have hemophilia.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid, there were conversations telling me I couldn't do sports. If I'm remembering that correctly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to talk about that, because like, anytime I hear stories where I'm like, man, let's give hope to people that have something going on, that no, you can go do what you want. And for me, like, it's a big reason I do this. Like, I have bipolar. Yeah. You can still go live a life. You can chase your dreams. For you, athletically, finding out you had hemophilia at a young age and then having to deal with that, what was that like? I guess let's start there and then move into the bigger events that you've accomplished since then.
Yeah. So, hemophilia essentially is a bleeding disorder. So I don't make one protein, in a clotting cascade. So essentially you have, think of it like a chain. So I'm missing a chain link. I don't, clot as fast, for those people who don't know what hemophilia is. Essentially, normally what happens is people with hemophilia have internal bleeding issues, normally into some sort of joint. And we call that your target joint. My target joint is my right ankle. So I will spontaneously have bleeding, and essentially my ankle will puff up like the size of a softball if I don't take care of it properly. Growing up, I have, normally it's a genetic, normally carried disorder. So normally it passes on, and normally it skips a generation. I had zero family history of it, and so we did not know about it. And my parents, I was officially diagnosed at 6 months, but my parents would essentially pick me up underneath the armpits, you know, just like how, you know, you pick up a normal kid, right? And so, you know, they pick up underneath the armpits, and then the next day I would have bruising all along my ribs. And so you can imagine, you know, how my parents felt about that. I have an older sister, and so my parents were like, whoa, something is not right, you know, and people would, it's sad, but like, you know, kudos to my mom for like being an absolute warrior, but like people would literally stop her in the grocery store and tell her to stop beating me, you know? And like, you know, because, you know, they thought it was child abuse, right? Cause you know, I had bruises all over and stuff like that. Eventually ended up getting diagnosed with it. I was lucky enough, my dad was in the medical world. So he was a dentist. So he understood, a little bit about the process of hemophilia. And like, they also too agreed that they wanted me to have as normal of a childhood as possible. And so, you know, I was able to play all the sports that I wanted to. I wasn't able to play football, lacrosse, and hockey. I could play hockey and pond, like pond hockey. Growing up in Minnesota, of course, you want to play pond puck. But you know, with that, you know, I wore knee pads, I wore elbow pads, you know, to like try and help prevent stuff, you know. And you know, it was a little weird, but you know, you're so young, you don't even think anything of it. Other kids don't think anything of it, you know. And by the time, you know, the bullying age comes around, then, you know, you drop the knee pads and you just kind of suck it up, you know. And but anyways, you know, growing up also too, I was the poster child of, you know, of like somebody with hemophilia, right? I played golf and I swam. You know, two very low impact, low injury sports. You know, swimming is great for you, you know, in terms of like muscular, you know, and like weight, you know, body weight and stuff. And so, growing up did that and then naturally started moving in towards, obviously swam, my wife, then girlfriend, now wife, you know, got a bike and stuff like that. And so naturally kind of started shifting towards that, once I was done swimming. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, those posts come from a person who's been told no way too many times, you know. And, you know, I remember when I told my hematologist, hey, I'm going to do this Ironman thing. They're like, I don't think you should. I think that's a very bad idea. And they said, no, no, no. And I said, I'm doing it. So we're going to come up with a plan around it because I'm doing it. And, you know, they just kind of looked at me like, oh, he's serious. Okay. All right. I guess we're going to try and figure out what to do. And so I think those posts also too, I know that, some of my following on social media is also from we call it the bleeding community. So hemophilia, von Willebrand's, other bleeding disorders. And I know that there are so many people who go, wow, I never even thought that was possible, you know, with hemophilia or whatever. And so I think, you know, those posts aren't meant to be bragging. They're meant to be like, I can do it, so can you, right? And make it be more of like an inspirational post. And like, hey, you know, again, this isn't the glamorous side, you know, like the glamorous side is getting the medal and finishing and, you know, the time and all that stuff, you know. And, you know, the non-glamorous side is the stories that I post afterwards where I can't even walk for 1 week, you know, of doing the Ironman, right? Like I remember doing the last Ironman that I did, it was Ironman Arizona in 2019. I literally could not walk for a week. I was hobbling for an entire week and I'm like, this is stupid. This is, I've crossed the threshold now where it's not worth it anymore. But I think those posts are more to like help inspire people and just get people moving, because oftentimes in the bleeding disorder like community, depression is a very big thing. And we talk about mental health, physical health, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, the bleeding into the joints and stuff like that. And when you're not active, me and you both know, when you're not active, you don't feel as good. And when you don't feel as good, then, you know, things can really start to spiral for a lot of those people in that community. And so, you know, if I can be one beacon of light and like, if I can be inspirational for one person and just get one person moving, I feel like that is 100% worth it, you know? And that's, I think, more what those posts are to me. And also too, it's also like, hey, I did it, mom, you know, kind of thing, you know, where I'm, you know, a little bit more like I did it, you know, like I worked really hard to do this and I did it, you know, and, you know, it's like, that's kind of more, I guess, my MO behind some of those posts and like with the hemophilia and stuff like that.
It is, you know, it's like mental health diagnosis. It is undeniable or inseparable from your regular life. It is part of who you are every day. And so when you are able to, you know, accomplish things, not necessarily in spite of it, but with it, it's, mm-hmm. it's that much sweeter and worth sharing to others, because of the value to it. But to me, you know, we keep talking about like, oh, social media, and I apologize that so many of my references
are, but
the reality is we haven't lived near each other in like 8 years.
For a while,
so
yeah.
I glean a lot through your social, but
of course.
To me, the most transparent part of your story is that in the fall of 2018 you lose your dad. And you had gone off to Arizona. You know, the amazing part of the Ben Hoffman story is like you go find Ben Hoffman and away your practice goes, as far as ramping up. But at the same time, you're in the process of losing your dad. And I think I'm right that when you moved out there, you kind of knew he wasn't in real good health. And you went anyways because he kind of gave you the blessing that like go chase your dreams. What was that like? Being in that situation where like, dad's not doing very good. I'm medical enough to know what's wrong. And yet I need to go do this.
Yeah. Extremely hard, is I think the first thing that comes to my mind. In the fall of 2018, or really in the summer leading up to it. So, my dad ended up passing away on October 18th, 2018. And prior to that, for about the past year and a half prior to that, he was sick and he had multiple different forms of cancer. The hardest, trying to think of how I can like best like go about this and answer it. Essentially, the hardest part is that I knew enough medically from my background in physical therapy to know what was going on and know that it wasn't a very optimistic outlook on his cancer treatments. And that is, sad. It's challenging. It's a blessing and a curse, right? I knew that my time was limited, so I tried to spend as much time as I could with him that summer. Around, you know, getting a job and, you know, if he felt good, you know, we'd go out and golf, or, you know, if he didn't feel as good, you know, maybe we'd try, you know, 18 holes and okay. Or, you know, driving range. Okay. If that didn't work, we golfed a lot, obviously. But if that didn't work and he wasn't feeling good, that's fine. Then we'd watch a Minnesota Twins game, you know, and just trying to spend some time with him. The other hard part too, and I don't blame my mom at all for this. She always wanted to know what it meant medically because she knew that my dad would never tell her what it meant medically. And that was very challenging, personally, just because I kind of knew what was going on. And my mom always, and I know, my mom needed to hear the most positive, optimistic thing possible, right? That is very challenging when you have when you're raised to be truthful and honest, you know. And you know, I didn't want to lie to her, but also too, I didn't want to sugarcoat it. You know, I kind of laid out the facts and tried to like show her like, hey, like this is kind of what happens with this. And so anyways, I ended up applying to residencies. I got into a residency, with the start date of August 1st. I think I had, 48 hours or 24 hours to make a choice, to make a decision on whether I wanted the residency spot or not. And so I didn't know. And like, it was, and then all of a sudden it was like, okay, you know, now you need to make a decision within 24 hours. And I was like, holy shit. You know, and trying to figure this out. I talked with my mom and dad a lot, mainly my dad, because he knew what was going on. He knew his prognosis. I knew what was going on. I knew his prognosis. He was waiting on a bone marrow transplant. And he essentially ran out of time, and wasn't able to find somebody in time.
Yeah.
And we had some really tough conversations about going and doing a residency versus staying at home, being at home, and, you know, that kind of thing. And ultimately, you know, my dad and I, we came to the resolution. I remember my dad specifically saying, I didn't raise you to keep your wings in. I raised you to keep your, or to let your wings spread and fly. Sorry.
Oh, you're good, man. We never need to apologize for getting emotional, especially talking about loved ones.
It was not what I wanted to hear, right? Because, you know,
yeah, right.
Because I wanted to stay there, be there for my family, be there for my sister and mom, knowing that hard things were gonna happen. Versus, you know, my dad essentially taking off the handcuffs and, you know, allowing me to pursue my dreams. And that it's hard. I mean, especially knowing that, excuse me, that his diagnosis was ultimately going to be fatal. And so, and knowing, you know, what he's dealt with leading up to that point, and knowing that, okay, like, he's been riding the roller coaster, and eventually, like, the roller coaster doesn't come back up, you know? And so anyways, you know, I talked with my mom and about that, and I know that my dad talked about that. And I think that that was hard. That was hard for her, for sure. Because, you know, she just wants family to be around, and, you know, they were married for 27 years. You know, and she doesn't know any different, you know, and, you know, I can't even imagine, you know, losing your partner of 27 years and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, and your son is halfway across the country. Right. And so, and he's in the middle of this residency and he's, you know, working and, you know, I just remember getting a phone call, and, you know, I would call my dad almost every day, you know, just talk, check in, see how he's doing, talk about sports, talk about the golf tournament, whatever. And, you know, normally, you know, I would be the one to call. And all of a sudden one day, I think it was like October, like 10th, 11th or something like that, about a week before, maybe less than that, maybe the 12th. I remember my dad called, and I was like, I like just pulled into my apartment and whatever. And, you know, I was, you know, I was like sitting there, and I remember I was on the phone in the driver's seat, parked, car on, cause it was hotter than blazes in Tucson, AC blasting. But I remember, my dad being like, hey, I think you need to come home. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, like, I'm like, what? You come home? Like, what? What's up? Like, I'll be home, you know, Thanksgiving, a couple weeks, you know? And I just remember my dad going, you need to book a flight and come home. And I all of a sudden hear my mom just lose it in the background, you know, just bawling. And I think that obviously that was very tough. To hear that, and, you know, contacted my employer, said, hey, I'm gone, like, family first, like, if you fire me or quit me from the residency, it is what it is, like, I'm out of here, I'm gone, you know, I'll be back, but, you know, I need to go take care of family. And you know, obviously in the next coming days or whatever, you know, my dad and I had lots of conversations, and, you know, when I ended up coming back to Arizona, I think, you know, obviously your podcast about mental health and stuff like that, and, like, there were some extremely, extremely dark days, you know, where that was, I was still trying to work through it. We ended up having his funeral. I flew back to Arizona 2 days later, which was an absolute mistake. 100% a mistake. I was not ready. I should have been another week or two up in Minnesota at least. But I flew home 2 days later and just buried myself in work as a way to cope and get around, the depression with his death and surrounding his death. And, you know, I'd check in with my mom and, you know, obviously she wasn't doing very well at the time, understandably so. I mean, you lose your partner for 27 years. I mean, my sister wasn't doing well, you know, and it was extremely challenging coming back to Arizona. And I buried all my emotions and buried everything in work. And so, you know, I think, it was good and bad, right? It was good because it allowed me to be where I am today, because I got so obsessive over something else and buried my head absolutely into it. But bad because I never really processed it properly. And, you know, that was something that, you know, a couple of years later I had to like deal with, is, okay, I'm done with this residency now and I'm done with, you know, all this stuff and, you know, and now what? And I know that it still also too has like lingering effects on all relationships that I have with people. Mainly because, like, you know, my relationship with my wife was much different. You know, there was good times and there's some rocky times, and, you know, that's to be expected with any sort of marriage. But you know, all my friends back in Minnesota, you know, that I literally was hanging out with and whatever, you know, a couple months prior, like, I stopped reaching out to them. You know, I got so obsessed and buried in my work, and, you know, as a result of it, you know, like, I still have good friends who live in Minnesota and who, you know, I know will always be there for me. But, that took time though to repair that like relationship with them. And, you know, there were times where like I went to a very, very dark place that I don't really care to ever be at again. And that's, and whether that was, you know, over, you know, lost my father, or, you know, your life essentially gets over, you know, the table gets totally flipped up on its head. My dad and I were super close, for context too. You know, we would golf in the fall. We'd go hunting all the time. Every weekend in fall, we were together all weekend hunting and stuff like that. And so we just had a very, very close relationship. And then all of a sudden, like you can't call anymore. You can't talk to them anymore. You know, like, you know, like there are so many questions and so many conversations I would love to have with him, especially now starting my own business, because he was his own business owner. He was a small business owner as well. So I would love to, I would love to talk to him about stuff like that. I'd love to talk to him just about like, hey, did you see that crazy like catch on, you know, that the Twins made? You see that crazy game last night? You know, like just silly stuff that, you know, you take so much for granted. And, you know, I think it's unique. My friends, who I have in Minnesota, my core like group of friends who I've kind of grew up with and were really close. Three out of the five of us have lost our dads already. Which is kind of crazy. Wow. One lost in high school, and then one, and then mine, and then one other like shortly afterwards. And so, you know, whenever I see people, and, you know, they're not appreciative of family and stuff like that, you know, it always kind of doesn't make me mad, but it just kind of like, man, you have no idea what you have, you know, because they have no idea what things they would be missing if they can't, talk to that person, or, you know, they didn't have that person. And, you know, there's a lot of life things that, you know, I think I'll be eternally sad just because I won't physically get to see that. Right. Like if my wife and I are ever lucky enough to have kids, yeah, like, you know, my dad would never be able to hold them, you know, like physically. Right. But I know, you know, mentally and spiritually and emotionally, like he will be able to, and he will 100% hold them. But it's something where I think it's you don't realize until it's gone. And I think that, you know, losing my father was extremely challenging. And, you know, I was lucky that, that I had enough of a support system to hold on a little bit, you know, and get me through some of the darkest times. But, you know, just like having those relationships and like talking about it with people, I found too to be like very therapeutic. You know, I know, you know, we've talked a lot about Ben Hoffman and stuff, and every Sunday, you know, we would lift, and, you know, I would open up the clinic, we'd go and get on our lift and stuff like that. And I mean, man, kudos to Ben. And Ben, I really hope you listen to this. I'm definitely going to send it to you, but like, and I'm sure he knows, but like, those lifting sessions, especially after I lost my dad, like those were my therapy sessions, like 100%, you know, and like, and, that helped me get through some of that, you know. And then, you know, I could tell too that like Ben, at least this is my perception, that him and his dad, his relationship changed after seeing like what happened, you know, with me. And, maybe it did, maybe it didn't, I don't know. But I really appreciate those like pseudo therapy sessions, even though they weren't supposed to be, but, you know, just like, you know, getting a good lift in, a little bit of bro time, you know, where, you know, you can just talk and, you know, get some good work done and stuff like that. But there were some very dark times, post lift, and I tried to absorb it in work, and that wasn't the right choice. But also too, like, that's also, I think, what has allowed me to succeed, which is like a challenging conundrum, I think, yeah, like in my own brain,
yeah,
you know, to try and like wrap around, is that like, oh, I probably wouldn't be here if, like, you know, if X, Y, and Z didn't happen. But it's, yeah, it's challenging. I don't know how else to like describe it. Hopefully I'm describing it well enough. So I'm like,
great, man.
But
yeah, you're great. This is, I knew coming in, we were going to talk about this. Obviously it's a big reason I wanted to have you on here, not to make you cry and like,
thanks, man,
get super emotional, but just, yeah, no problem. you know, there's so every single person either has lost somebody really close, whether it's a parent or a spouse or a kid or something, or they're going to, like, you don't escape this. Like, this is a normal part of our lives, and it is crushing, you know, as adults now, when we see it, how people, it plays out in their lives, it is crushing for people when it happens, especially if they get stuck. And I had always kind of watched you from afar and been like, this was insanely hard, but he didn't get stuck. And I had kind of thought, I wonder if he buried himself in work, which I totally understand. Like, yeah, like that's how people that think like we do things. But at the same time, I knew that that couldn't have been all you did to make it out on this side. And obviously you're never going to not miss your dad, you know, and there's always going to be that heaviness and that hole that you carry. But, you know, you did find those sessions with Ben to be beneficial. And I'm sure there's other things you did as well so that you didn't get stuck. And that's really why I wanted to have this conversation, because I knew, A, we have a friendship, even though if it's very old.
Yeah.
You know, but like, I'm trustworthy to you, and we can talk about these things and dig in deep, and people can hear that how they feel isn't so different from how you felt or how other people that go through this feel. And so I like, yeah, I just so appreciate you being willing to open up like this, man. It's really powerful.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And, you know, obviously I knew what the topic was a little bit coming into it. And I was told myself, you're not going to cry, Sam, don't do it. And sure enough, here I am. But I think, you know, that's, you know, it was 2018. That was almost five and a half years ago, right? Like, yeah. And, you know, I still miss him every day, you know, and it's something that you're right. Like you, every day I'll think about him, you know, and it might, someday it's more than others, right? Some days I'm super sad because, you know, man, I can't believe this. Like, this is happening in my like professional career. Like, this would be so, like, I want to call him and just tell him. And, you know, obviously, you know, I call my mom and tell my mom and stuff like that, but it's just, you know, it's, they're different people. And, you know, my relationship with my mom is also very good, but, you know, it's different people. And, you know, you talk to people in different ways, and, you know, those are two different people. And that's always something that I think, you know, that you kind of deal with day to day. But like you mentioned, like, I didn't get stuck. Like, I 100% got stuck. And I think that's something important, is that, like, yeah, I did get stuck. You know, the difference was, is that I was able to somehow pull myself out of it. You know, and I think, you know, there are days where it was like extremely dark and like, you know, you're like, man, I just don't want to do anything today. And then there are days where, you know, you're riding high and you're like, life is great. Like, this couldn't be better. You know, it's a beautiful day and stuff like this. And, you know, hey, you know, my, you know, parents and mom and dad would be so proud of this and that. And, you know, then there are other days where you're like, man, like, I need a sounding board and I need something to be able to like sound off of. And I think that getting stuck, trying to figure out how I can like describe this, like, it's cliche, but you hear people talking about, in order to get stuck, you have to hit rock bottom, right? In order to pull yourself back out. And I mean, I don't think I'm any different. I think that there was definitely a time where I was like rock bottom, and it wasn't pretty. It wasn't great. I did not enjoy it by any means. But that, I think, is something though that like you have to, you have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, like, there's something more to this. And, you know, I know that like I'm put here for a certain reason, and my reason is not to, you know, sit on this couch all day. My reason is to go out, you know, and in my case, go and help people and like recover from injury and like help them achieve like higher sports performance than you ever thought you could. And I think that's what I think helps get you out of that. And then your network and your resources that you have available are like your tow rope. And essentially it's up to you though, to give it the gas and be able to, you know, they're pulling you, but you also have to give it the gas in order to get out of that rut. And I think that's what was there is that I had a lot of people pulling for me. You know, especially after, you know, my dad passed, like, you know, the thing that people don't talk about is that you have a ton of support the first 2 weeks after they pass, and then it all goes away.
Yeah.
Right. And that is the hard part, right? Like that's also too, when you just start processing what the hell just happened, you know, you're like, okay, yeah, they're not here anymore. I still have a phone contact for them. My mom still has his phone, like all these different things in the house. What do we get rid of? What do we not? What do we pass down? What do we not? And like, that's when you really start processing it. And I think that's something that I have really learned is that like, yes, 100% show support when someone has a loved one who passes, show support right away, because that's super important, because like there's initial shock with that. But also too, call them a month down the road. Call them 2 weeks after. Yes. You know, we're like, yes. Because that's honestly when they actually need you. It's not, yeah, of course they need you right there. Like all the people who showed up to my dad's funeral, like 100%, like it was incredible. He was a dentist. He had his patients freaking showing up to his funeral. Like, I'm sorry, but like no one really loves the dentist that much, right? That like they're going to go and show up to their, right, to their dentist's funeral, you know, but like my dad was made a difference in their life that they felt like they had to go away from work and show respect and like come and talk to us, right? Like, you know, and like that was also extremely healing, you know, but like when I really needed people was like 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 6 months. Like that's really when I needed people to like call and check in, like, hey, how you doing? Like, you doing all right? Like, I'm here for you, you know, yeah. Whether, you know, and, yeah. You know, I know that there was times where, you know, I reached out to some of my buddies and I'm sure at some points it was inconvenient and some points it was fine. But also too, I shut down and that was not great. And that I think was what led me to get so damn stuck before I actually like got out of it. Yeah. But I don't think, and like, I know my mom and sister also got stuck, and that was a struggle because yeah. We were all kind of stuck at the same time. And you know, I didn't realize how much my father was the glue of the family. Because you know, everyone kind of has their own role in a family and that kind of thing. And you know, you never realize how much yeah. Is the glue until you don't have that person. But that would be, I think, my biggest piece of advice for people who's like listening and like, if they know somebody who has had a loved one pass, especially like a parent, or a spouse or something like that, just go check in with them. Hey man, how's it going? I'm here for you. You know, like even something simple like that. Like I remember, I had a buddy text me and it was like a week after, and I was starting to struggle because I went back to work. I was like, this sucks. You know, yeah. I'm grinding, I'm seeing all these patients are like, oh, where'd you go? You know, for the past week and a half. And then you have to explain to every single patient, hey, my father passed. And then they're like, Then,
why are you here?
Yeah. And then I had to answer that question. You know what I mean? So like, you know, it's like it slaps you one way and then it slaps you the other way. You know, it's like, oh, where were you? Oh, my father passed. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Wait, why are you here? And then it's like, oh, get slapped back the other way. But I, you know, also too, like, don't get me wrong. Some of my patients also too, like, I think they provided me more therapy than I provided them, you know, and, you know, you're open and whatever to those patients. And like, you know, you get that same amount of energy in return. And I think, you know, just being there for people is so, so important. And I think that's probably, if I had to stress one Absolutely. Thing, is just to like be there for people and like send them a text or call them, even a text, quick text takes 30 seconds, right? Not even 10 seconds. Hey man, how's it going? I'm there for you. Like, you doing all right? And like, you just never know how that can change somebody's like perception of the day and like how they're feeling mentally.
Absolutely. Sam, you talked about your advice for people on the outside in this situation. Mm-hmm. What would be your advice for the person in your shoes about how to move through things? Because I think that's equally as important. And maybe you don't have real concrete advice for them, but my guess is you do.
Yeah. I would say the biggest thing for people internally is to like find help if you need it. And, you know, I know that I was super reluctant, not gonna lie. And you know, as any Midwest family would be, right? You know, you kind of keep your cards close and, you know, that kind of thing. And I was super reluctant to talk to people about it, to admit that I was struggling with it, and like talk to it, because I was just trying to bury it. You know, I was trying to bury my emotions and stuff like that. And I finally, you know, I went for my like once a year physical, and you know, they always give you those depression screens and stuff like that. I'm in the medical world. I give those depression screens to people too. I know how to cheat them really well.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah. And better than anyone. Right. And so, you know, for a couple of years, like I cheated it, you know, because I didn't want to talk about it. I did not want to talk about it. I did not want to admit it. I did not want to admit that I was struggling. I did not want to admit that I had some struggles with some depression. And finally, you know, I just remember, you know, I went to that one appointment and, you know, I answered it honestly, and all of a sudden, you know, the social worker came in, and you know, they always go over that stuff or whatever, you know, at this annual appointment that I have, and you know, they're, oh yeah, you're doing great, okay, great, awesome, well, if you need me, here's my contact info, blah blah blah. And you know, I knew the social worker, I was there for 2 or 3 years prior, and you know, I'm sure she was going in there being like, oh yeah, he doesn't need anything, he'll be good, like. And all of a sudden, it was just the floodgates opened. And everything came out, and it was super relieving, but also too, I had that own internal fear still of like holding on and like, oh my God, what did you just do? But after like started doing some of those sessions, like I felt way better. But don't get me wrong, it was a struggle to like dig yourself out of that, but it was something though where, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the water level was rising, it was starting to spill over, and that was spilling over into my personal relationships and like, and also to my own like mental health. And and finally I was like, okay, I gotta talk to somebody about this. And you know, trying to be the glue and take place of my father, and you know, living halfway across the country, that's really, really hard to do, right? And you know, trying to take care of my mom, trying to, you know, make sure that my sister's okay. And you know, my mom was definitely lost, I was lost, my sister was lost, and I was trying to hold everything together, and that wasn't something super super beneficial for any of us. But I think once I started like reaching out and actually like talking about those things, it was much better. And like, I'm definitely happy to say I'm like in a much better place mentally now. But don't get me wrong, like there's still ups and downs and there's still ebbs and flows. I mean, as you know, you know, there's good days and bad days, you know, just like I talked about, you know, some days, I see my dad and I just kind of smile, you know, or, you know, I'm out on the golf course and, you know, I just kind of smile like, man, he would love this golf course, you know, and like, it would be so much fun to play, you know, and whatever. And then other days it's like, oh man, like this really sucks. I really want to talk to him about this. But just like anything else though, like there's good days and bad days. And I think that's really important to like be mentally stable and able to overcome those small humps, and so they don't become a larger mountain that you have to climb up and over, like what I did, where I dug myself so much into a hole that, you know, it took months to get out, but I was still functioning.
Yeah.
Right. I was still treating patients at a high level. I mean, all of the stuff that we talked about with all the pro triathletes and USA and all that, like all that was still happening. So like, I think that's what's really crazy when people hear this story. And like, I admittedly enough, I haven't told this portion of the story before. Like, but I think people would be, I don't want to say confused, but like people will be like, wow, like that's kind of crazy. And like looking back at it, I'm like, yeah, that's batshit crazy. Like I can't believe that like I accomplished yeah. all of that while still going through all of this. Like that was a little crazy, but I think also, you know, that also helped me get to where I am.
But that speaks.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And that speaks to like what a real mental health collapse can look like. And, you know, people know my story, know that like I was in the middle of the most successful soccer season of my life. And like 3 days after I hit bottom, I won coach of the year, you know, and yeah. like nobody would have guessed it yeah. except for behind the scenes. I was just a complete disaster.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to, you know, you mentioned I finally filled that thing out honestly, you know, the GAD and the PHQ that mm-hmm. they always give us mm-hmm. at hospital visits. There's so many people that I've talked to that are like, yeah, I knew I was at the bottom because I finally like filled it out, like legit. And then I realized like, whoa, we got a problem here. And I can speak yeah. personally to that too. Like I know that feeling. And so, you know, I just be to everybody, be honest about how you're feeling, folks. And like, there's nothing to hide. And we yeah. are two Midwestern boys. And, you know, you're talking about going through all this at a time when, yeah, when we're like, yeah, we're supposed to be tough and we're supposed to just internalize it and we don't have to. Yeah. And thankfully now we're starting to be able to have these conversations more. And I'm glad we can talk about it. And I'm glad you can get it out in the open. And everybody's just going to be like, man, I'm really glad you made it back out the other side alive, because yeah. I think we all have friends that didn't. And so it's this, like I said earlier, this episode took a zig that I kind of thought it might, but it took it like way harder than I had anticipated. Sorry, in the best that. Possible way. This is absolutely, no, don't apologize. Don't apologize. This is amazing to hear this. And I think about so many people who have gone through this same thing and feel like they're alone or feel like somebody doesn't understand. And so many of the things you talked about are just right on the money that the general public needs to hear. And so I'm really, thank you for coming on, Sam, today. If people want to find you, if they want to follow along with your ever more realistic social media presence, where yeah. can they find you?
Yeah, Instagram is probably the best place to find me. That's where I post the most, and you know, stories normally. Within Instagram, I probably like the real raw stuff. My Instagram handle is the endurance physio, the and endurance both have an E. So it's the, and then endurance and then physio all in one. But yeah, that's probably the best place to find me. It's the most used platform I have. So
you also have a podcast, correct?
Yeah. Sorry. I need to get better at this, man. I need to learn how to plug my podcast and stuff. So, yeah, I, I do a podcast with a buddy, Will Gonzaba. He's another PT, and we talk about endurance athletes and physical therapy and rehab and performance of those. And the podcast is called The Endurance Physios Podcast. So right along the same lines, but The Endurance Physios Podcast. And that's awesome. So please follow along there and follow along on social media. I'd love to connect with people.
Yeah. And it is a deep dive into the world of that is you. I've loved the episode on foot strengthening, and I loved uh-huh. the episode on heat management. And it's like, it's all kinds of goodies in the nerdery. So
yes,
it's real good stuff if you're into science-based treatment and all that. So Sam, it has been awesome, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on today and hanging out with us.
Yeah, thanks, JP. I really appreciate it. And thanks for, you know, pulling me in. And obviously, you know, we took a deep dive, but I think a lot of people will be able to relate and connect with it. So thanks. I appreciate it.
100%. Dr. Sam Rockwater, everyone. Ooh, thanks for listening today to what was a very heavy episode with Sam. And probably more importantly, do me a favor and reach out to the people around you in your lives and let them know you love them. Like Sam said, it's 30 seconds to send that text. But heaviness in life is always, 100% always lifted when we know we aren't alone. It maybe doesn't lift permanently, but it lifts momentarily when we feel loved by those around us. Finally, the Stable Cyclist podcast is a twice monthly show focusing on long form conversations about bikes, mentality, and when the situation is right, we will dive deep into mental health. Episodes always drop on the first and third Monday of each month, and we'll also have bonus pods when possible. Have an amazing day. Thank you so much for listening, as always. And most importantly, remember that you are loved.